everybody, and welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly. This is episode number 89, and we are joining you from the burning hot, fiery flames of hell in Southern California.
Today was actually the hottest day on record in human history in Los Angeles. Like, it was 113 degrees in downtown LA today.
Yeah, it's
pretty
bad.
Yeah, I've lived here my whole life, and, you know, Ben P is the one that, you know, from out of the out-of-towner is the one to tell me that the guy from Florida, you know, hey, just want to let you know today is the hottest day ever in Los Angeles. Oh.
When the heat is just reflecting off the sidewalk,
yeah,
it's bad.
Yeah.
Ah, reflective heat. Never a good sign.
Yeah.
So I'm your host, Dr. Venkman. Joining us tonight is Mazer. Hello, Mazer.
How you guys doing?
Hot, but good.
Yes. Yeah, nice. So hot. Ben,
I took
G.
a cold shower before this podcast. I'm just letting that
nice.
Be known.
Really?
Nice.
Yeah.
Taking one before I go to bed. I'm sleeping in the cold shower tonight.
I'm actually taking one right now, but I'm doing very well, Dr. Venkman. Thanks for asking.
Nice. And P. Vader, what's up?
Not much, man. How are you?
You know, just living it one day at a time.
It's a good way to live it.
Yep. P. Vader put up some reviews.
Yeah.
I know, man. It's been great.
Yeah, it's my contribution to the Geek Tyrant website.
Well, thank you very much, sir. We really appreciate it.
No problem.
And they're good, you know? I've enjoyed reading them, so thank you.
Good, I'll have to keep them coming.
And, I don't know, we'll get into this later, but you kind of made me not want to watch Let Me In.
Uh-oh.
But that's okay, because
yeah.
I was never really into it anyway. But I kind of was. I was, and I wasn't.
I've read Ben and P. Vader's reviews, and I probably still want to see it, even though I've seen it.
Yeah, right.
We'll get into that in a little bit.
We'll get into that. But just want to let you all know that this podcast is going to be a little bit different. We didn't do a podcast last week. Everyone was just crazy busy. I was out of town. Mazer was out fighting Nazis. Ben P. was sneaking on the set of some movie, taking behind-the-scenes photographs. And P. Vader was just sleeping, so.
And all of us won the day. It was
we just couldn't get it together. So here we are. We're really backed up on movies. So this is going to be like our big Geek Tyrant movie review roundup. We've got a list of movies here that we're going to go through and, you know, give a few quick little reviews on them. We're going to talk about Legends of the Guardians. We're going to talk about The Town. We're going to talk about Devil, Easy A, The Social Network, Let Me In, Buried, and Catfish. So in no particular order at this time, we're just going to kind of start and just go from there.
I'm super psyched about this, by the way.
I am too, because Ben and I have been talking throughout, you know, the last couple weeks. We're like, dude, there's so many movies. I want to talk to you about this and that and the other thing. But I think I want to start out with The Town.
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
Because we have some very different opinions on this movie. And I was looking forward to seeing it. I'm a big fan of Ben Affleck's Gone Baby Gone. I thought he did a wonderful job directing that film. So I was looking forward to seeing what it, you know, his follow-up directorial film would be, The Town. Love what I saw in the trailer. You know, ended up sitting in the theater watching the movie, and as I'm watching it, I just was constantly being let down by what I was seeing on the screen, what I was hearing, the acting, the dialogue, the script, everything was just like knocking blocks off the top till near the end. There was just nothing left for me to like about that movie.
Even the directing? You thought Ben Affleck did a bad job directing too?
The directing was fine, but it was everything. I mean, it was the story. It was the way it was constructed. I couldn't get over the fact that I told Ben this earlier. That I couldn't get over the fact that it was like watching a poorly made student, like college student film.
Yeah, I saw you post that.
They had these moments in there, these drawn out monologues where you're just like, oh my gosh. No one says this in real life. People just don't do monologues like this. They're searching for something. They're trying to get, it's like they were trying too hard to like, this is an Oscar worthy moment. But it turned out being not, it was just annoying. You know, I don't know if you remember this part where Ben Affleck's talking to the girl, and he starts giving this his past story and all this stuff, and you're just like, just stop.
Which girl?
Rebecca Hall. Yeah.
Rebecca Hall. And I'm just like, just shut up already and move on with the story, because this is doing nothing to move the story forward for me. I don't know. And it was like that for me through the whole
Was there not enough nudity in this film for you, Venkman?
No, not at all. Okay. Actually, I don't think there was any. Was there? PG-13.
There was, yeah, there was.
I don't even remember. if there was, I couldn't tell you where it was at.
They go to a strip club in the very beginning.
Oh, yeah.
After the first heist.
All right.
I forgot about the strip club.
Yeah.
So...
P. Vader, I gotta hear your response to these allegations about this movie.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, it's really surprising. I mean, I've known Venkman's opinion on this for a while, but when I initially heard that this was your opinion, I was kind of like, wow, really? I thought this would be a movie that you would really like, you know? Like,
I did too. That's the thing, is I went into this with a positive outlook, thinking, hey, I know, yeah, I was like, I don't know how I'm not going to like this movie, because it just looks like it's going to be a great film, you know? And I just couldn't get into it. I couldn't
I'm just hearing, like, the biggest gripes is, like, it seems to be the script and the performances, mostly, it sounds like.
And you know what? I had no problems with either of those, really. Like, the script is, I mean, if you can fault it, it's not terribly original. Like, it's all stuff, this whole movie is kind of all stuff you've seen before.
Yeah, and your review, actually, I totally 100% agree with your review on this, that it wasn't great, it was good. But,
yeah,
you know, at the same time, it's like, I'm not going to go out of my way and recommend it to people. And when I put that up on, you know, I told everybody on Facebook and Twitter, you know, like, oh, I didn't like it. It was like a student film or whatever. And people, like, came back at me, like, well, we saw different movies then, because I thought it was amazing, you know? And I'm just like, ah, man, I don't know, guys. I'm like, I just don't see it.
This is the type of movie that people get very polarized on, because it involves badassery. And with the recent wave of, you know, everybody having their voice on the internet, which I'm not impugning in any way, because we are talking right now and we are having our voice broadcast on the internet. But I'm just saying, fanboy culture, really, has been all about, like, things either dominate or they suck hard, and there's no middle ground. I was reading, somebody said that recently. It might have been Devin from Chud or something, and I thought that was a really kind of, I don't know, really good, yeah, exactly, insightful look into fanboy culture, because this movie's a good example, where, like, I'm kind of right there with P. Vader, where I think this movie was very good, it was not great, it was not The Departed, as much as the marketing would have you believe it is, but it was very good, and I don't think that there's, you know, the people who are proponents of it will be like, oh yeah, this is awesome, and then... I don't know. I don't think it deserves that kind of that kind of excessive support. But I had zero problem with this movie. You're talking about all the things where, you know, characters would go into what you considered excessive monologues and things like that. The script did not bother me in the least. I'm right there with Vader again, where, like, yeah, it's things that you've seen before, but something that I think I wrote this in my review, like, you don't go to this type of movie to see originality. You go to it to see these specific characters and these specific actors, more importantly, bringing this particular story to life. It's something like this is what I compared it to in my review, was the cop movie Pride and Glory from, I think it was last year, 2008, 2009, with Colin Farrell and Edward Norton. And it's like, you know, the cop drama, you know, we've seen that hundreds, if not maybe thousands of times on screen, but it's all about that particular incarnation of it, and just watching these actors kind of work their craft and present us with an entertaining story. And I thought The Town did that in, you know, on every level, and I thought Ben Affleck did a really great job with it. I don't think it's going to win him very many awards or anything like that, but as far as delivering a really solid piece of entertainment that I would recommend to people to go see in a theater, yeah, I think that's exactly what this kind of summer, you know, that's kind of transitioned from summer into fall, I think that's what the movie scene needs.
Yeah. Also, just to let people know, if you haven't checked out the Rotten Tomato meter, it's like, it's got a 94.
That's what's just bugging the hell out of me.
And the audience review is 89. Did you watch The Seventh Seal before watching The Town? Were you on an Ingmar Bergman marathon or something? Or
no, here's the thing, too, is, like,
were you expecting a drama?
With the people I went with, I had to talk all of them into going to see it. Because nobody wanted to see it.
It's so like a guys, Piranha 3D scenario over again.
I was like, guys, this is going to be so awesome. Yeah, it is, dude. I was like, you're going to love this movie. And you know, a couple of the guys I went with did like it. But in the end, you know, they were kind of like getting on me, because I'm like, oh, man, I just hated it. They're like, you're the one that talked us into going to see this stupid movie. I'm like, have it.
My biggest concern is that you were pleased with the trailer but didn't like the movie, because for me the trailer is really almost perfect representation of what the movie actually is. I don't know, I don't see the disconnect there.
I love the trailer, and the trailer totally sold me on the film, but there was just so many loose ends and stuff that just didn't connect, and there were parts of it that didn't make sense. Like it didn't seem fluid to me.
Really? I don't know, man.
Well,
I think we're just gonna have to agree.
A lot of people
disagree on this one.
We'll have to see if people leave some comments on the podcast.
A lot of people disagree with me, but yeah, whatever. You know, that's fine. Because I like the Expendables.
Yeah.
Go fig, right?
There you go.
But the thing is, I think, you know, they're two way different movies. Absolutely. And I was expecting something. I knew what I was expecting from The Expendables. I thought I knew what I was going to expect from The Town, but I just ended up...
Were you expecting, like, another, you know, Gone Baby Gone? Or were you expecting something more in the spirit of, like, Inside Man, or something more of a heist film, or...
No, I mean, even the heist part of it. I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, the heist scenes were really cool. And I'm just like, I thought the heist scenes were pretty lackluster.
What?
They happened, but it was like, I never really cared what was happening to these characters. Like, just kill them all. By the end of the movie, I want Ben Affleck to die at the end of this. If he dies, this movie will be so much better.
Okay, all right, so you're going to sit here and tell me that Jeremy Renner wasn't good in this movie?
Dude, this is not his best role, that's for sure.
Well, it's not best role, but I think he does a good job.
I think that...
everyone did... I know everyone had their good moments, but I think the bad moments outweighed the good ones.
I think, yeah, we're just at total like polar ends of this because the two reasons you just said to that you like don't like the movie, the heist scenes and sort of like the ensemble cast, I would say in my opinion those would be my two recommendations of like why to see this movie.
Ditto.
And it's like, you know, they do these heist scenes, but it's like, I don't know, maybe I'm used to heist films where it's like, you know, okay, here's a good example. I did watch Ocean's 11 before I saw this movie.
Okay.
Now, that movie's about planning a heist and pulling it off. In this, you see no planning whatsoever. They just say, hey, we're going to do this, meet there. Everything's already planned, but we never see any planning for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but they're two totally different types of styles of heist movie. That's the brilliance of Ocean's 11 is watching the planning throughout the whole thing and then seeing it.
I know.
The town is more of like a smash and grab job, definitely, but that also is where it succeeds, in my opinion, because it's this real kind of visceral, like, boom, all of a sudden you're in it, and it's like almost like Point Break in that regard, especially with the masks and stuff. It's like, that's what it reminded me of. I don't know. Yeah, I think we're just like,
we are.
No, there's an impasse that we're not going to be able to meet up, so.
There isn't. There really isn't. I just don't think this is...
All right, well, let's move on, because we've got seven more films to review in 20 minutes.
I know.
All
right. I just had to get that out of the way.
Yeah,
all right.
I think that'll probably be our longest one, so.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go move on to Devil. Did anybody see Devil?
No.
Nope.
Besides me?
I boo the commercials on my TV.
Everyone boos. I want to see it, dude. I honestly do. I just didn't get a chance because I was seeing all this other stuff. I've heard that it wasn't that bad. What did you think about it? Because I'm not sure what you thought about it.
It wasn't that bad at all. Okay. In fact, a lot of people compare, you know, they see M. Night Shyamalan's name attached to it, so they automatically will say, okay, this is an M. Night Shyamalan film. I had to explain to several people and people still think he directed it and wrote the script for it. And he didn't. He didn't direct it or write the script. He wrote the story, but he didn't, other than that, and producing it, he had really nothing to do with developing the film beyond that. But since everybody is comparing it, saying, oh, it's just, and I'm like, Shyamalan film is going to suck, if you want to do that, then I will say that this movie is better than his last four films.
Okay.
It's not saying much, but...
Yeah.
To me, it was more entertaining than the last four films that he's made. And I enjoyed it.
Now, we're talking about a lot of films. Would you recommend this film over any of the other films that we're going to discuss? Other than The Town?
Yeah.
I'd have to go say, I would definitely recommend Legend of the Guardians before Devil. I'd say Buried before Devil. I haven't even seen The Social Network yet, but I'd say that before Devil.
So I think what you're saying is it exceeded expectations, and to be fair, the expectations were it was going to be awful. So
exactly, and the ending. A lot of people are probably there's going to be. It's not really controversial or anything. It's just the way it ends. A lot of people are going to be like, "Oh, stupid!" Or there's going to be a lot of there can be a lot of discussion on how the film ended. Mm-hmm. It ended on the movie being called Devil, and you go through like all this horror and killing inside an elevator and stuff like that. The movie has like, interestingly enough, has an uplifting meaning or point.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a positive message to it, which is kind of I thought was interesting. But I won't say anything or spoil it for anybody, but. When it ended, I felt good about how it ended.
Okay.
If that makes sense. I don't know.
Shyamalan was the devil and he dies at the end, right?
Exactly. And the crowd cheered and standing ovation. It was amazing.
I gotta ask you real quick. This movie, I believe, was directed by the Dowdle brothers. Is that right?
Yes.
They did a movie called Quarantine a couple years ago. Did you see that film?
I did see Quarantine. It's a remake of this Spanish film Record.
Yeah, Rec. Yeah. R-E-C. What did you think of Quarantine?
Quarantine was a shot-by-shot remake of Record.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, literally, it's just in English, but it was shot-for-shot, the same exact movie with different actors.
Okay, right on. I did not see the original Record, but I did see Quarantine and liked it quite a bit, so...
Yeah. I mean, you know, same thing with your Let Me In review. If you've seen Quarantine, then you've seen Record. If you've seen Record, you've seen Quarantine. Yeah.
I was just wondering how Devil stacked up. You know, if it was just like an impressive kind of directorial step forward for these guys, or
cool. I liked, the story was very simple. I mean, most of the movie took place in an elevator, and in like a security office type thing. And they had to be inventive on how they did things to keep things interesting. And I thought they did a decent job with it. I mean, it's not an amazing, brilliant, groundbreaking film, but they took this simple story and made a good movie. So
cool.
Acting was pretty good. I liked the acting in it as well. Everybody did a pretty solid job.
Okay. Would you recommend people see it on DVD?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those movies you don't really have to see in theaters.
Sure.
You could check it out on DVD. You'll get just as much enjoyment out of it.
Cool.
As you would have seen it in theaters, but yeah.
I might give this a chance, but I'm borderline boycotting M. Night at this point.
Well, like I say, you wait for it on DVD.
Yeah,
you don't need to see it in theaters.
And don't, to stretch a ridiculous metaphor, don't punish the sons for the sins of the father. And in this case, the father being M. Night Shyamalan and the sons being the Dowdle brothers.
That's what sucks for the Dowdle brothers is
nobody knows that they directed it.
Exactly, they're being pushed aside. And people are just judging it by the
because
fact.
I think it's funny
M.
that
M. Night Shyamalan's name is attached to the trailer for the film.
You know, I don't know why the studio didn't pick up on that quicker and change things
especially
faster.
After Last Airbender.
Yeah, well, especially now that things show up on Twitter and things move within hours.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing. If you move on a story 3 hours late, you've already missed the wave of information.
Yeah.
And it's really amazing that these studios would still be circulating trailers and materials that are just damaging a film they're trying to release.
So. Yeah, and this is the first of three films under M. Night's The Night Chronicles banner that he set up at Universal. They had a three-film contract. The next film, I can't remember the name.
It just changed recently to something. I don't recall what it was
exactly.
Either.
But it deals with a jury who are in the jury room or whatever, and they have to decide whether to convict this killer or not, but there's evil spirits in the room trying to sway the jury on how they should vote.
Yeah, deliberate.
Is it? Deliberate, whatever.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting concept. It's like 12 angry men with evil spirits, devils. That's cool, right? I don't know.
Maybe.
We'll find out.
Do you think M. Night could ever just do a film with a straight up drama without anything supernatural?
Probably not. I don't know. I'm sure he could if he wanted to, but I don't think he will.
Just wondering.
So, I don't know.
All right, well, which one do you want to talk about next? We've got a dearth of options. I don't even know if dearth is a real word, but
how about we go to Easy A?
All right, Mazer.
Mazer,
hit us up. What'd you think? I wanted to see this movie.
Easy A is I wouldn't say it's a smart. I mean, it's a smart film, but it's not an inaccessible film to regular people. It does a lot of smart things, and it points out cliches in a lot of teen films. The entire film basically rides on Emma Stone being this likable girl who is attractive, and it works.
Now, do you think Emma Stone is attractive?
Yeah.
Yeah, just wondering.
And if she's not Mary Jane Watson in the new Spider-Man series, I'm going to be mad.
Yeah.
I agree. I think she'd be perfect.
Yeah.
For that part.
But I think that, people, if, it feels like it's a normal film, but there's a lot of intelligent stuff going on in this. And it's interesting that it feels like it's a film that maybe could be rejected by audiences, just because it's smarter than it advertises itself to be. But I just looked it up on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's actually got like an 85.
Yeah.
So it's doing pretty well.
I've actually heard nothing but good things about it.
Yeah, it's just a solid, solid film.
Stanley Tucci and Patricia Clarkson, is that where you were going with that?
Her parents. I've yet to see a family unit that is as interesting to watch on screen as those three.
Really?
Yeah. I would love to see just the three of them in another film, in a road trip film, in a someone is someone's employee boss thing.
Even something like Little Miss Sunshine, which seems kind of, you know, along the same kind of low budget.
Yeah, I would love to see them in more stuff together, just because it's interesting to find people with two actors with chemistry, but it's kind of weird to find three actors that work really, really well together.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, I'm hoping they're in more films.
Cool.
But definitely very funny as well.
What was I going to say?
Big screen or DVD?
DVD. I mean, there's nothing visually cool about, but I mean, if you just want a good fluffy piece, if you've just been disappointed by The Town and you want to see a film that will make you happy, I would say watch Easy A.
Yeah, the other thing I was going to bring up real quick was the, even from the trailers, which is the only stuff that I've seen from it, it seems like the dialogue is very snappy and kind of smart, and it's almost like, from what it seems, it's not overly smart in a kind of Diablo Cody type of way, like not in an annoying fashion.
Yeah, but even then she's referencing stuff that is... She references Judy Blume in a joke, and the audience gets it, but it's like, is really Judy Blume still, you know, in the public mind? I guess so. So, yeah. I mean, they find ways to take some of these slightly obscure things and reference them in really interesting ways.
Cool.
So
awesome.
Definitely a recommend.
Sounds good.
Nice.
Venkman, you want to go with the Owl movie?
The Owl movie?
I want to see this.
I do too, dude. Actually.
I'm going to tell you, Legend of the Guardians was awesome.
Nice.
I loved this movie. I loved it.
Did you see it in 3D?
I did see it in 3D. I recommend not seeing it in 3D for the fact that the 3D like tints it. It's a pretty dark film as it is. So the 3D, and it didn't have... Whatever James Cameron did to make the 3D all colorful in Avatar, they weren't able to do with this. And so it's really tinted and dark.
The reason Avatar looks so good in theaters is that each copy of Avatar was tuned to each theater. That's how insane they went. And they did color timing on all of them per different type of projectors and stuff like that. Like, the guy was insane about
it. Yeah, hardcore.
I just think Legend of the Guardian, you're going to get the same amount of enjoyment not seen in 3D, but the colors are going to, I guess, pop out more. Which,
on this film, amazing.
This film, you really want to see it in, like, all its glory. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful animated film.
Make sure it's in focus. Right.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, definitely. If it's out of focus, I would get my money back and complain. Possibly burn down the theater, fix it.
Does it retain the Zack Snyderness?
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. It's got the slow motion moments.
There's speed ramping.
But it's so freaking cool in this. It's like I said in my review that those parts where he does that, these owls go all out war on each other, and so when they're in battle and you know when he does his speed ramp, slows it down and speeds it up type thing, it looks so freaking cool. And it, you know another thing I said is, like, I will never look at owls the same way again after watching this movie because they are so badass.
All right, well, I don't want you to give anything specific away, but when you say all-out war, are you talking about, like, clawing and pecking, or are you talking about, like, dropping, you know, like, unrealistic...
bird poop on each other?
No, not necessarily that, but I mean, like, you know, dropping boulders on people. Like, what kind of battling are we referring to here?
No, they go in, they have these, like, you've seen in the trailer, they've got kind of armor on them.
Yeah,
do
like
they explain
sort of
how they're able
things,
to make it, by the way?
Or how they're able to put it on without a opposable thumb.
Exactly.
I mean, they don't really show how it all... I mean, they show, like, them making stuff, but they don't really show them putting it on type...
Okay.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's like Batman sliding down the pole in the 1960s. Like, yeah, you don't need to see him wear the, like, transition into the suit. It's just there.
Yeah.
But they got these cool, like, you know, these metal or these like swords or metal claws that they attach to their claws and stuff. So when they fight, they've got weapons, you know.
So they're drawing blood, is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, but they, you know, being a kids' movie, obviously they're not showing blood, but at
they're
the same
drawing
time,
sweat.
You can imagine what Zack Snyder, like, if this was 300.
Yeah,
you know,
there would be, like, owl decapitations.
It would be owl decapitations. There'd be blood flying all over the place. It'd be just a bloody mess of owl pieces all over the place. But it was a dark film. I mean, this isn't a film... I took my kids to it, and they enjoyed it. But my kids, I mean, they'll watch Lord of the Rings, so...
Yeah.
They weren't really... phased by. I mean, there were moments in there where,
let's be honest, Venkman, they also watched 300.
Okay, you're right. I showed them it right before we went to see Legend of the Guardians.
How does this compare to, like, a How to Train Your Dragon? How does it compare? Have you seen that, Venkman?
Yeah, How to Train Your Dragon. Yeah, I mean, as far as animation goes, this is by far, like, some of the best CGI animation I've seen in a movie. If Pixar or DreamWorks, any of that stuff, I mean, this animation...
Oh,
just,
you're talking of all time now.
The CGI animation in this destroys what, like, Pixar and,
wow,
and DreamWorks.
I've rewatched the trailer several times.
Reason I say that is because, I mean, you look at the Pixar films and they're cartoony, you know?
Right.
And I'm not saying the animation is bad. It's just that's their style.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if you're going for, like,
realism,
some kind of realistic, very artistic design, I mean, this movie, I mean, every shot is, like, if you freeze frame it anywhere in the movie, you're like, I could have that as a poster because that looks awesome, you know?
That's really cool.
I heard there's a really beautiful, amazingly cool-looking rain sequence.
Oh, dude, you can actually see this if you want. You can watch it. They have the film clip of that online right now on Yahoo Movies. If you want to see, I mean, they got it in HD. But yes, there is this rain sequence in this film that just blows me. It blew me away. I was so pumped up watching this thing. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just beautiful animation. And so as for the animation, it's definitely not going to let you down. Story is solid. Nothing we really haven't seen before story-wise, but the script and the story, everything flows well. It deals with owls.
Does more of the movie does more of the movie take place in the air or on the ground?
Most of the movie takes place in the air. There are sequences where they are on the ground. Like, or in the trees or up in the mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, at the beginning of the movie, these two owls that are learning to fly fall to the ground, and they're freaked out that they're on the ground because they've never been on the ground before.
That's
so
cool.
they're just like, what the hell do we do? How do we get back up? Because we can't fly back up in the tree, you know? And so it's really interesting to see how everything unfolds. But like I said, the story's pretty dark. Deals with some very like heavy family issues, you know?
Yeah, it sounds a
sibling,
bit.
Sibling rivalry to as hardcore as you could go with sibling rivalry.
Yeah.
It's pretty deep, pretty dark, but very, very fun.
Now, it's a few books condensed together. I was actually talking with a 10-year-old kid
breaking it down for you.
Yeah, he was telling me about the film, and I was like, okay. And he's telling me how good it is. He was talking about, I think they condensed like 3 books. Does it feel like it's really compressed, or?
No. The story flows very well.
So you don't have a Last Airbender situation?
Ugh.
No. There's none of that going on. The movie flows well. This is a movie I have to recommend you go see it on the big screen.
Okay.
Nice. Because it's beautiful. You look at the CGI that was done in Avatar, and you went to see it on the big screen because you wanted to see all the details and everything that James Cameron did, bringing that to life. And I see the same thing as with Legend of the Guardians, that the animation is just so epically beautiful that it's meant to be seen on the big screen.
Nice.
Sweet.
It's good to hear.
So, yeah, I definitely recommend it. Don't let just because it's about owls, don't let you turn that off
because of their lack of opposable thumbs.
Yeah.
just please, go watch it.
No, okay. it's just a very fun, action-packed movie, and I think everyone that goes see it will get a kick out of it. So
cool.
I definitely recommend that one.
All right, which one do you want to talk about next?
I'm interested. Let's save Social Network for last.
All right.
So let's talk about Let Me In.
All right. So P. Vader and I saw this like 3
Thursday.
Nights ago. Yeah, something like that. So Vader, why don't you go ahead, and then I'll just kind of accentuate.
I mean, it's really hard, kind of. Let me just have this as kind of a precursor to what our reviews will be. If you've seen if you've seen Let the Right One In,
that's the original Swedish film.
Right, correct. This movie is a remake of that, and it's so close to that one. It's hard to discuss one and not the other. So, that being said, this movie is unique in that if you combine it, like I'm talking about both movies here, it's unique in that it's kind of like a story you don't really see a lot. It's kind of I think I described it as like a coming of age story in my review. It's not like your typical horror like pop out and say boo type thing, you know. There's definitely like a heart to it, and the characters are more well developed than you know your standard run of the mill horror flick. That being said, it's going to be very annoying if you've already seen Let the Right One In, because it's almost the same movie. It's like when you're watching a rerun on TV and you want to be able to change the channel, so you do. But this one, you can't change the channel because you're in a theater, and that's what's on. So,
you're like, oh, I've seen this movie before.
Yeah, but
I don't really need to watch it again.
But you technically haven't seen this movie before. It's just kind of frustrating.
Yeah, but in essence, you have. Yeah. I'm there with you, and while I was watching it, I was getting frustrated and annoyed because it was to the point where halfway through or a little bit after, I was just waiting for certain events to come up, because Vader and I had actually seen Let the Right One In fairly recently, within the past 2 or 3 months or something, and so all those things were very fresh in my head. I mean, the Let the Right One In came out in 2008, but all those events from the movie were very fresh in my head, and seeing them on the screen in Let Me In was just it was like a checklist through after throughout the movie, because, you know, I gave it the first half or something to kind of establish its own thing. And I'll give Matt Reeves credit. He does do some things that are different from the original, and he makes what ultimately turns into a much darker feeling movie than Let the Right One In. But really? I think it's because the setting and the kind of moody, atmospheric nature of it plays into that a little bit more than the actual story elements, because the story elements are almost identical. So it's just the way the cinematography and the way things are presented on screen. And it's like, Let the Right One In, because it was set in Sweden and it had this very snowy feeling and stuff, the movie, for some reason, it felt, I'm not going to say bright, because it's not a bright movie, but it felt kind of cold and separated. And this one feels kind of murky, if that makes sense. Like, I know I'm speaking in kind of ridiculous, whatever, generalities and stuff right now, but that's just kind of the gut reaction that I got from the movie. Like, it has this kind of dankness about it that,
it's set in New Mexico, so...
It's set in Alamo.
Yeah, like Los Alamos, New Mexico, yeah. And it's set in the 80s also, so that kind of thing plays in, as you know, that kind of, it allows for the same type of events to happen with no cell phones being around and things like that, you know, things where you can't, as an audience member, be separated from the movie and be like, oh, well, why don't they just call the cops? It's because you can't. You have to go to a payphone and stuff like that. So, like, the, you know, the actual time period helps out with the movie that way.
Well, especially when the book is written, as far as I understand it.
I think
the
it's
time
set
period
in that time.
It's set in the 80s,
yeah.
Right? So
I think so. I actually have not read the book. But what did you think about the performances?
I thought Chloe Moretz did a really good job. I think it's kind of a sign of, you know, her future potential as maybe a major player.
Especially as none of them, the major actors, had seen the original film.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. Because she reminded me very much of the Swedish actress who played the girl.
Yeah, they did not. Matt Reeves told them, do not watch it until we have completed.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. As well as Richard Jenkins and,
Elias Koteas.
Yeah.
He plays a cop who's kind of tracking him down, tracking down the murders and stuff.
And the boy. Cody
Smith McPhee.
Chloe Moretz gave an interview in which she admitted that she still hadn't seen the movie because her mom doesn't let her watch rated R movies.
She can't see, like, half her movies then.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Wow. But, she did a really good job in this, and, you know, it's probably worth seeing for her performance.
Yeah, if you guys have never seen Let the Right One In, the thing is, we talked about this in the last podcast, which, again, I know was like 2 weeks ago, but we were saying, or I was saying, or somebody was, I don't remember who, was talking about this movie might just be completely and utterly inconsequential and totally unnecessary, because it's just an English language remake of an already solid film. And that's, I think, unfortunately, what it is, because it really is just a carbon copy with a few tweaks, and Matt Reeves, you know, tries to put his own spin on it in certain spots and succeeds in certain spots, but when you take a step back and look at it overall, it really is kind of the same movie. Okay, so let's get all of that stuff out of the side and just look at it as its own thing now, right? So it's a really great movie because it's almost exactly the same thing as the first one. Yeah. So if you've never seen the first one, you're going to probably like this, you know, because it's story. The characters are great. It's like you said, the characters are a lot better drawn than normal horror movies. The movie itself is punctuated with like these bursts of violence that are just kind of shocking. And the whole movie has this very kind of steadiness to it. That is just massively disrupted by these bursts of violence along the way, which is very effective and a lot more different than the kind of typical jump out and scare you type things. It's not the score, which Michael Giacchino did the score, plays well into the movie, and it's not something like Drag Me to Hell where the score blares loudly at you to kind of play on the notion. And yeah, it's very the score is kind of by the numbers as far as Giacchino's work goes. Yeah, I mean, he's done some great stuff in his career. I don't really particularly think this is one of his best pieces, but it's good, and it accentuates the movie very well. So just kind of as a whole, I think we both agree that it's a good movie.
Yeah.
It's just kind of,
I think for him to have pulled off a good movie is really amazing, because there have been shot for shot remakes of several films that have been terrible.
Yeah. And I mean, we should make clear that it's not literally a shot for shot thing. Yeah. This is not a Gus Van Sant Psycho situation here.
Yeah.
But it, because it's set, and it that was kind of a strange part to me too, was because it was set in New Mexico, I wasn't sure how well that the setting was going to be able to translate. And for me, it was like a lot of the buildings and stuff looked the same as they did in the Swedish locations, and a lot of the kind of angles that they got, and you know, there were a lot of shots that were literally type of, you know, from the same angles and stuff. But it just kind of struck me as coincidental.
New Mexico
was
an interesting setting.
Yeah.
It was, he was saying that when they shot there, I think people hadn't shot there for like 20 or 15 years.
Yeah.
Filming in that area. It was, yeah, I've got to say, it's just, I'm just wondering, I mean, I wish we had someone who had read the book.
Yeah.
And has seen both films, because they said that they introduced more material from the book into the movie.
Yeah, I didn't notice a lot. We were talking about it right after, when we were trying to come up with sequences that were featured in Let Me In that were not in Let the Right One In. And I think we only came up with maybe two or three scenes or something that were added.
And one of them that you said, I couldn't even remember the movie.
So maybe those are the
scenes
from the book, or something.
I think they had talked about, like, her gender ambiguity.
Yeah, that was actually excised from this.
They skipped it.
They skipped it.
Well, they touched on it, but there's a particular shot in Let the Right One In that kind of is like one of the shots that everybody remembers if you've seen that movie.
Yeah.
And that shot, obviously, is not in an American remake. And that's the one other thing that I wanted to mention, too. I know we're getting long on this, so I'll try to wrap it up. But, like, the fear from everybody was, oh no, Let the Right One In is being Americanized and turned into this remake. And I mean, we on this podcast had that fear too, of like, oh, they're gonna water it down and make it this kind of stupid version and take the heart out of the movie and not show all the kind of graphic violence that they needed to kind of punctuate the story along the way. And that's not the case. They keep those same scenes in there. We'll say there's a scene that's set in a pool at the very end of both movies that is, like, that's one of the ones I was worrying about, and that's kind of brilliantly executed, actually. It's very well done, and it's almost exactly the same as the first one. So people who are frightened of it losing some of its... losing something in translation, put those fears to rest, because that's not the case at all, with the exception of that one particular shot, which they kind of readdress in dialogue later, or earlier in the film.
At some point.
So, yeah, at some point.
Okay.
But yeah, overall, I would say Let Me In is a very good movie. It's just kind of borderline annoying because of how similar it is.
So if you are the, quote, lazy American who didn't want to watch Let the Right One In with subtitles...
Yeah, see this one instead.
Yeah, see it. That's okay. That's who it's there for, honestly. And I think
there's probably going to be more people who see it. So.
Yeah, yeah. But I would recommend that everyone go check out Let the Right One In, just because it's maybe a more interesting movie, just because of the location and the way that the actors look, and just the, I don't know. They're both very good.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. I probably will wait for DVD now.
Thank you
for that.
Fair enough.
You want to talk about Catfish?
Yeah, we both saw this one, too.
Yeah,
what can you talk about
Catfish? That's the thing. This one, I don't think we should give too much away.
If you haven't seen the trailer,
don't watch it.
Don't watch the trailer. Because
if you haven't?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have not.
Because I've watched the trailer.
Oh no.
And they do this whole thing and build up to this, like, you won't believe what
just
happens
erase it.
Now.
Erase it from your memory. Because I watched the trailer, too, and I'll just say that I went in thinking the movie was going to be one thing, and I was kind of mad at it for a certain point of time, and then I realized I was wrong because the trailer
led you
totally
to believe,
misled
yeah.
me. Yeah.
Yeah, if you have not seen, I would recommend that everybody see this, because everybody in our generation, which is the kind of Facebook generation, check it out, because it's a very interesting commentary, and I'm not going to say even on what. That's how, like, mysterious this movie wants to be, and I believe deserves to be. I think
it's worth watching. Keep it mystery and go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think don't watch any clips, don't see any trailers or anything. Just go see it. Like,
don't
grab a bunch of your friends.
Don't read reviews.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're doing our best not to really say much about it, so you're okay with listening to this podcast, but don't turn this off as we're talking. But,
is it a must-see in theaters? Or is it a must-see in theaters so people don't ruin it for you?
The thing is, I don't think enough people are going to see it for anybody to ruin it for you. And if you've gone this far without reading anything about it, I think you can have the self control to not read anything about it for a little while longer until it comes out on DVD. I would say that everybody needs to see it in whatever capacity you can. It's just very good. It's very, you know, I've never seen anything really like it, and it presents a lot of kind of interesting ideas, and it does get suspenseful at points, but not for the kind of reasons that the trailer would indicate. And I don't even want to say what the trailer makes it look like, just because if you haven't seen the trailer, I don't want to put those images in your head, you know? It's like, I just want to keep everybody completely as fresh as possible and just say, if you have seen the trailer, just erase all of that and just go in with an open mind. And I'm almost certain that nobody else has ever really seen anything like this before, so
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, and I think that's where everybody should be, and I want to eventually down the line, maybe when it comes out on DVD or something, we can kind of talk about it with spoilers and talk about what we think some of these things represent, and I'm trying to choose my words carefully here, but we'll just talk
the
about it. Yeah,
of the movie.
Yeah, exactly, the implications. So we'll talk about it a little bit later if you guys want to down the line when it comes out on DVD.
Sounds good. Interesting.
How about Buried, real quick? I know this is one that you love. You saw this at Sundance, right, Venkman?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite movies of the year.
I enjoyed the hell out of this movie. I did not... I remember we were at Comic-Con, and you guys brought up a trailer one night when the kind of new trailer for Buried came out, and you guys were like, oh, this is such an awesome trailer. And I'm like, no, I'm not watching this. I know. I was like, I know I want to see this movie. So, and I know the entire premise is Ryan Reynolds is set is trapped in a coffin for the entire movie. And I was like, any trailer that I see is going to give away images from the movie. It's not like other trailers where it's okay if you have snippets of other scenes and stuff, because the entire thing takes place in this coffin. So I was like, I was totally averse to the trailers, because I was like, this is giving away key portions, because everything you see is a key portion. You know, do you understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So I refused to watch it with you guys, and then I went and saw the movie, loved it, went and saw that trailer, and was like, holy crap, this is a really badass trailer. Like,
I
really
know,
enjoyed
right?
it.
It's
and
like,
it actually,
and they showed nothing.
Yeah,
right?
and it actually didn't really show anything, because it shows these still frames from the movie, which don't really give that much away, which is what I was worried about.
Yeah.
But it's very cool. It's one of the coolest trailers I've seen in a while. So I would say, like,
amazingly restrained for
absolutely.
A marketing campaign. To,
I would say
to
if
that.
You're borderline on seeing Buried, watch this trailer, because it's actually really good. And even if you've
don't,
already seen the movie,
watch
go back
the
and
TV spots. There are some TV spots that they're starting to release now that actually give plot points away, and you're like,
oh, that's terrible.
Oh, why'd you guys do that?
The TV spots are for lazy people. That's what it's for.
I'm just like, dude, they don't show that. Why did you just do that?
Anyway, I mean, the movie...
The first two trailers are amazing, though. First two are awesome.
Yeah. And Ryan Reynolds is literally the only actor that you see in the entire movie, which, you know, some people find hard to believe. But it's true. You do not see, and the entire thing is literally set inside of this coffin. You
never
leave.
There's
nothing outside of it in the entire thing.
And it's
so
still
it's
interesting.
Like, it's very interesting. That's the thing that I was going to say. I was like, I don't even care if this is a good movie or a bad movie. I just want to see if Rodrigo Cortez can make an interesting movie set inside of a coffin, which I think has a lot of the film community interested in the movie. I don't know how well it's going to play the general audience.
Well, it's always one of those things that, like, you imagine, hey, what if we have a guy in a box, and how can we make that interesting as a filmmaker? And
it seemed, I don't know, Venkman, what did you think about the shot choice? Because to me, it didn't seem like he returned to very many shots on a very regular basis. It seemed like a wide range of shots.
I was like, through the whole movie, I'm like, how is he doing this without going back to the same shot over and over again?
Yeah.
Because literally every scene is different.
Yeah, I mean, he returns to,
you're
like,
just,
some
and you're
base
in the same place.
Well, I mean, he's probably creating key moments and finding angles and mapping it out like you would, like, in an animated film where you do a color map for the whole film. Probably kind of like that with shots, but still.
Yeah, and in my review, I said, I mean, this guy, Rodrigo Cortez, is like, this guy would make Alfred Hitchcock proud of what he did.
He would.
I mean,
you know, you hear,
Alfred
actually, that's
Hitchcock
one of the
would love this film.
That's one of the things about Catfish, is like, in the marketing, it kind of plays it up too much. It's like, the final 40 minutes will leave you breathless or something, and you're like, come on, like, blow me, get out of here. but the freaking, and it says, like, Catfish is the best Hitchcock film that Hitchcock never made, and you're like, come on, like, stop, this is ridiculous. But Buried, I feel like, is like, those comparisons are a little bit more apt in this case, and I think Hitchcock, definitely this is something that he would have made if this script was given to him, you know, 40 years ago or 50 years ago or whenever. I don't really know when Hitchcock's heyday was, per se. He was making movies for a long stretch there. But, yeah, man, I don't know. I really, really enjoyed this movie. The ending is going to be controversial for some people, and I don't even want to get into that at all.
Yeah.
As far as, like, what, if the movie succeeded in making an interesting thing, an interesting 94-minute feature set inside a coffin completely, absolutely it did, in my opinion.
And thank goodness they got Ryan Reynolds for the part. One, because he's
a
great
fantastic actor. Yeah.
Two, I hope he's nominated for his role in that.
See, I don't know if it will be. It's such a genre thing,
either,
and like,
but it was. But he did such a good job.
I
it'll probably be a launching pad for him for other stuff.
And yeah, that guy's blowing up. I don't know. I mean,
that's the thing. That's the other thing.
Years,
is
like
if you know, a lot of people probably wouldn't see this movie if Ryan Reynolds wasn't involved with it. So thank goodness they did get and now A-list actor to take this role in a small movie.
Yeah, and I mean,
actually get people into seats.
Yeah, and certainly, like, the Green Lantern casting and stuff has improved this movie's popularity, by proxy. But, yeah, man, I think Ryan Reynolds was, like, I was kind of astounded in the beginning at how well he was doing and holding the movie emotionally and physically and everything by himself, because he's the only person you see. The entire movie rests in his ability to convince the audience that he's in this believable scenario. And then, at a certain point, I lost critical awareness, and I was just completely into the story and just right there with him. And after I left, I was like, holy crap. You know, it wasn't until, you know, hours later where I was like, Ryan Reynolds did that. Like, he was the one who really, like, emotionally grounded this movie, and it was just an amazing performance from him.
Agreed.
So yeah, I would definitely say to see this, and I would kind of recommend seeing it in theaters too, just because
I would
the
too,
theater
because
itself almost serves as a metaphorical coffin where you're like trapped
you're
inside.
Absolutely,
you know?
Right, and the sound effects.
Oh, the sound design is so good in this
amazing.
Movie.
Amazing, and it's to have, you know, the surround sound in there and hearing these noises in different parts of the theater. Yeah, it is. It's a metaphorical coffin. I mean,
And it's so dark in there, and it's like dead dark inside the coffin as well. So it's like when the coffin is dark, the movie theater is dark, and there's nothing going on. You know, you're not going to get that same type of darkness in your home. that you'll get inside of a theater being completely blocked in.
With your VCR blinking at you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think that really, really enhances the experience.
Yeah, I'm actually, the only time I saw it was at Sundance, but I can't wait to see it again. I'm really looking forward to seeing it a second time.
Yeah, and Ryan Reynolds fans will love it, I think. And it's just needless to say, but
yeah, definitely.
So I guess I'll talk. Is that it? Is that a Social Network? Is this the last one?
Yeah, Social Network. Okay. This is one I seriously can't wait to see.
I really dug this movie, and it wasn't until afterwards where I was kind of writing up my review and I was thinking about the term masterpiece, and like, you know, we again, this whole fanboy thing that I was mentioning earlier, it's like the movie rocks or it sucks, and there's a lot of hyperbole thrown around, and I went to Webster's and looked up masterpiece to see if the actual definition truly applied in my mind to how the Social Network was executed, and it was. So I think, you know, especially with this year, with Inception, Scott Pilgrim, and now The Social Network, those are like my three movies of the year. And it's like...
Still haven't seen Tron.
Yeah, right. Haven't seen Tron. And yeah, there's a couple others coming out. The trailer for True Grit looks really great. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah,
it
came out today. I haven't yet to see it.
But honestly, like, though, right now, those are my three movies of the year. Like, my three must-sees, and the three that I think are going to have the most replay value over the years, and will eventually, and that are already in some sort of position in my favorite movies list. I don't know where they are, but yeah, I know they'll stay there. Like, that, yeah, they'll move around a lot, but those three movies are just fantastic. And The Social Network, like, I want to wait for the most part to kind of talk about this with you guys when you guys see it, because I know everybody, you know, wants to see this, and with good reason, because Aaron Sorkin and David Fincher, like, that's not a pairing that you would really
for something like this.
They work so well together. It's unreal. And I'm not even terribly familiar with each of their works individually. I've seen a few Fincher films, not his entire filmography, and I've only seen, you know, two or three Sorkin movies and never seen an episode of The West Wing. So it's like, you know, I'm not, like, a super authority on either one of them, but man, their styles, both of them, come through. Like, the snappy dialogue of Sorkin and the visuals and, like, meticulous nature of Fincher are just like a pairing that is an absolute wonder to behold, and it's like, it's really kind of an amazing movie. So
now, in talking to people outside of the online community, just general audiences, I've noticed that I'd say a lot of them aren't interested in seeing this movie. They don't care.
Yep.
Of how Facebook started. They don't find that interesting.
Yep.
At all.
And I would,
but
I
Justin
would put myself...
Timberlake is in the film.
Teenage girls aren't what they used to be with the bye 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 craze and all that, and NSYNC that doesn't draw people to the theater as much as they used to. But
Venkman, I was the same way, and when I first heard of this movie's existence, I was kind of like, what, a Facebook movie? Like, come on, who cares?
Yeah,
but
a lot of people still have that attitude, and I think, you know, as good as this movie looks, as excited as I am to see it, the reviews that have been coming in have all been positive.
Yeah.
We've seen this before where a movie just gets high praise for what it is and then completely bombs at the box office because no one cares to see it.
And that's outside very possible.
Outside of a small community of movie geeks, you know?
Yeah, it's very possible. And I think, you know, what you guys were talking about, the perception of a Facebook movie is almost something that reminded me of, like, when United 93 came out, almost like a too soon type of thing for a 9/11 movie, or World Trade Center when that came out.
Yeah.
You know, people kind of distanced themselves and kind of ruffled a little bit at just the notion of that, because not that much time had passed since the actual event. And I mean, The Social Network takes place, you know, it starts in 2003, so it's only 7 years ago. Like,
and it's with people who are still alive.
And that's a huge part of it, too. It's like, the people, you know, that's what kind of makes the movie interesting on another level, is like the portrayal of these people who are not only still living but still working, doing the kind of same thing. Like, Zuckerberg still runs Facebook. Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
These people, some of these litigation cases and stuff were still pending.
They're happening again. Yeah,
until very recently, and then because of the movie had been started up, you know, restarted and stuff. So it's like there's a lot of different levels that this movie works on right now culturally, and it's just I don't know. It's very, very well done on every level. The performances are awesome. Jesse Eisenberg, you know, I said in my review, a lot of people call him the poor man's Michael Cera. I'm sure I've even called him that at one point. But he really kind of steps out of that shadow and delivers just a pretty astounding performance that's almost like he's got Asperger's or something, because he's just, like, not really
aware of, like... They say Zuckerberg has.
Really?
That's what people
say
he has.
He's like a carbon copy of him, because
sorts of stories where it's like Facebook is blue because he's colorblind. There's all sorts of things. I'm interested to see what you got, because I work in the web, and I've read everything about Facebook. I read the book.
Have you read? Okay,
Accidental Billionaires and all that. So
yeah,
I'm excited to see when this comes out. But I mean, I'm hoping it gains some traction. But it's interesting, because other than, you know, Silicon Valley, which was this Steve Jobs, Bill Gates story.
That was like a made-for-TV
film, and it still colors people's perceptions of how they see Bill Gates and Steve Jobs.
Yeah, so this is gonna
he's not even 30, and this is gonna color people's perceptions of him for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
It's really interesting that they're going about this.
Yeah. And then, like, as far as the other performances, Timberlake was awesome, surprisingly good. And I generally kind of like his acting work, but he was very good in this. Armie Hammer, who is a guy that, you know, the only mention I've ever heard of this dude was he was supposed to play Batman in George Miller's Justice League movie that never got made. You guys remember that? Like, what was the name? Adam Brody from the OC was supposed to play the Flash, and like all these really weird casting things. Armie Hammer was a guy that, you know, nobody had really ever heard of, and we're like, who is this guy that's going to step in and play Batman? He plays dual roles in this movie as Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss, who are like two of the people who are suing Mark Zuckerberg for intellectual property theft of the idea for Facebook, and he is just like really, really solid in both of these roles. And it's like, you know, I was like, because I didn't know who this guy was, I just thought that they found identical twins. Like, that's how good he was in both of these roles. And then when the credits come up, I was like, holy crap, that was one guy? And that also speaks to the technical craft of the movie, because it's not like a 1960s Parent Trap situation where they're clearly on the side of a line and stuff. It's like integral
Fincher's
visual style.
Great at visual effects, like this
invisible
like that.
Yeah,
you know?
It didn't even cross my mind that was a possibility, because I didn't know who the guy was. And then as soon as I saw the credits, you look at the movie in an entirely different way after seeing that.
How is Andrew Garfield?
He was really solid, too. And this is a guy that, like, I had just seen him in Never Let Me Go, and he gives this kind of dramatic performance that's, I keep using the word punctuated, but punctuated with, like, these outbursts, like, almost cries for Oscar attention moments.
Well, the character's volatile.
He's
an artist, let's
say. Sure. And yeah, exactly. And then here it's like a totally different guy. Like, it's amazing. Like, this guy Andrew Garfield is really something special, and I think I don't know, I had some reservations about him being Spider-Man because of his age, but if he can slip in and out of characters from the Red Riding trilogy to Never Let Me Go to Eduardo in The Social Network with no problem and kind of almost effortlessly, I don't think he'll have any problem slipping into the Peter Parker role. But yeah, man, it's such a good movie. I can't wait for you guys to see it.
I can't wait for me to see it either.
Yeah. It's always interesting when you watch the making of a David Fincher film, and there's so many sequences where you're like, wait a second, so everything was in front of a blue screen? I thought that was a real place.
Yeah, seriously.
They didn't really shoot at Harvard? Or, you know, I mean, there's going to be a lot of things like that where there's going to be a lot of stuff where we don't even realize the amount of stuff that's not real in the film. And I guess, like, the two acting performances out of a single actor. That's hard to pull off.
Yeah.
Just
that is hard.
Just watch the special features for Zodiac and you'll be like, what the hell? Like, are you serious?
Man.
Yeah, I did not realize how many visual effects were done in Zodiac.
It's kind of like...
And that's not an effects-driven film at all.
It's not.
I
guess neither is this film.
Yeah, exactly.
No, not in the least.
But I guarantee, like Mazur said, when they come out with the special features, it's going to be completely loaded with special effects that you never knew were even there.
Yeah.
Crazy. But awesome. So what movies do we have coming out here this week?
Well, it's two that we actually already talked about. It's Let Me In and The Social Network. So you guys won't have to wait long.
Awesome, because it is awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Good times.
Yeah, and again,
so
I would definitely...
So Social Network, obviously, the big pick of the week.
Right, yeah, absolutely. And I think for people, I don't know why this audience would be listening to this particular podcast, but if you're one of those people that loves listening to podcasts about movies but very rarely goes out and sees a movie, if you're one of those people that sees, you know, six movies a year or something, make sure The Social Network is one of them. That's how good it is.
Somehow, yeah. Yeah.
So.
Awesome. Real quick, before we end, just want to let everybody know, I'm sure you've all seen it by now, but Geek Tyrant has undergone yet another revamp.
It's badass, people. Check it out. GeekTyrant.com. What?
Yeah, what, so we've got a version 4 of this site, and it's big. It's literally bigger. Yeah.
It's epic.
It's wider. So for those of you who visit the site, most of you have screens wider than 1280 pixels, and that's a vast majority of you. So, there's a small minority of you who are still with smaller screens, but most of you have larger screens. So what that does is when you go to the site, images are bigger, videos are bigger, there's less scrolling because the text is all just right there. Ads seem smaller as well. I don't know. We've also upgraded our mobile version, so it takes full use of those iPhone 4 Retina displays. I have yet to see one in person, but I've only got it in a virtual... virtually testing it. How does it look?
I think it looks great. I love the mobile site.
Sweet.
We're working on some stuff for some optimization stuff. We're going to do it where I think ads load after the website fully loads.
Nice.
Things like that. There's stuff we're going to do to, like, for the mobile to make it not load ads, and for regular readers for things to load only after content has loaded. That way you get a far quicker Geek Tyrant experience.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We track down to the millisecond. We time those details down, so.
Yeah, and, you know, you guys can feel free to donate to us at geektyrant.com/donate to help fund these kinds of progressive measures we're taking to improve your experience. So
yeah, because right now we're just doing it for fun.
Yeah, but and then we also got the store too, right?
Yeah, geektyrant.me. You buy t-shirts and cool glasses and
go ahead. Oh, no, we've got cool stuff.
You go.
We're about to I'll do it at some point tomorrow. We're going to start selling 3 red and blue glasses on the website.
The 3D glasses?
Yeah, the red and blue, the classic 1950s 3D.
Yeah, and you could look
just
like...
Just in time for Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah, you can dress up as the Thug from Back to the Future.
That's what I was just going
to
say.
Yeah, we're trying to find more stuff.
Not Billy Zane.
We're trying to negotiate. We're trying to find stuff that's kind of unique or just hard to find for Geek Tyrant. So, one cool milestone that you guys didn't know that we passed. Geek Tyrant has surpassed 10,000 posts.
Nice.
On the site.
What? I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Shit.
Wow.
That's a lot.
And I'm pretty sure 6,000 or 7,000 of those at this point are probably yours, Venkman.
Yep.
Shit.
Unreal.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So I think we are at the 2.5 year mark right now.
Good
stuff.
So
yeah. I only know this stuff because I'm updating the about page. So
okay, well there you go. Awesome.
Well, yeah, in the meantime, guys, feel free to subscribe to us in iTunes. You can track us down there. Just type Geek Tyrant Weekly into the podcast section, and you'll find us. It's free. You should do it. And then find us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/geektyrantfans. And check out the site itself. We didn't talk about any news this week because we had all these reviews to talk about. So
to get your fix
in the news, check out geektyrant.com and check out P. Vader's reviews of The Town and Let Me In as well.
So, because next week we'll pretty much be discussing The Social Network, and then we'll probably get to some news.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Also, follow us on Twitter, at Geek Tyrant, for all you Twitter freaks out there. We've been holding some contests on there. We got another contest coming up for Twitter soon, so we'll announce that. Be some good times. It's going to be for Buried.
Nice.
So, yeah, I think we're giving away a signed poster or two.
Give that away to me, sir.
I know, right? I'm like, could we get one of those? Do you have to give it away to our readers?
I'm a reader.
And just so you know, we don't get this stuff. You know, the studios give it to us to give to you. That's how it goes.
We have to go to other websites to get their stuff.
Exactly.
We pose as civilians to win prizes from other websites.
So, yeah, just look out for that. And, other than that, keep coming to the site.
I was about to say a time that actually happened, but I'm not going to.
But yeah, just keep coming to the site. Keep reading our stuff. If you have any suggestions, drop us a line in our email, which is kind of our suggestion box.
I don't know if you want to open those floodgates, Venkman. It's been a while since you've mentioned the email inbox, but all right, go for it.
Yeah, so the email is right, geektyrant@gmail.com.
As if people couldn't just randomly guess that's what I know, it was. Right? But yeah.
We also have a convenient contact page where people can fill it out without having to log into their email account.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. So that's
we get a lot of stuff through there. So.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely. And just feel free to drop us a line. We're open to suggestions and all that stuff. So other than that, thanks for joining us and listening to our podcast. And we will talk to you all next week. Have a good one.
Bye.